This is Taylor Report, CIUT. It's time to think about your tote bag and your trip to Iceland, which I know you're all scheduled.
You have to bring the tote bag with you when you go to Iceland.
When you go to Iceland, yeah. There'll be kind of privileges. You walk around. They see you in Iceland with a CIUT tote bag.
Yeah. So, by the way,
super cool.
If you're one of the few people who don't know what Phil's talking about, we're going to fill you in. A week from tonight is the that date, November the
12th.
12th. Thanks, Phil. Is the launch?
I'm the one looking at the calendar.
Right. Is the launch of the membership drive at CIUT? And when you have an opportunity to take out or renew a membership in CIUT to contribute to the station and contribute to the well-being of the station and to the well-being of this program, the Taylor Report, which has run for quite a number of years and with great support from our listeners, and we hope that that will continue Monday night.
Fundraising festival.
Of course.
On the 12th. You don't want to miss it.
You do know that when you contribute, your name goes into a draw for a free trip for two to Iceland. And I like to remind you that you're competing against a modest number, but one that is still in the thousands of people who support this station. It is a much better investment than buying a lottery ticket if you're ever inclined to do that, because your chances of going to Iceland are much, much greater than even winning $2 in the lottery. And you also know that your money went to a great cause, which is this station.
Yeah.
And Phil, I got to tell people in Iceland that they have a prime minister. I don't really know her name. Yes, I do. Jakob's daughter. She's the daughter of Jacob. That's how Icelandic names work.
All right.
And Madam Jakob's daughter, who leads a coalition government, so she says she's not in a position to carry out all of her wishes, but that if she has her wishes, Iceland would stop talking to the EU about becoming a member of the EU because they don't like the way the EU kind of pushes around the smaller countries. And she said, I would like to take Iceland out of NATO. And I know that my party may be the only one saying that, but I can tell you that the Icelandic people all agree that we don't belong in NATO. And by the way, NATO, just to show how to be bad guests and have bad manners, had a big exercise in Iceland this past week, and they exhausted the country's beer supply. Well, that's not a joke. They were out in the countryside, and there were entire areas of Iceland where the Icelanders couldn't get a single beer because the NATO troops who were training for cold weather combat
were loading up.
True
NATO
story.
Is loaded in
true,
Iceland.
True story. And if you contribute to CIUT,
you were thinking
you
of
might,
a sneak attack. That was the day. Where are they? They're all drunk, sure. They'll be ready in the morning.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right?
that might be a little late, Sergeant.
Right.
You round up the best you can find. A lot of battles have been lost due to intoxication, I want to tell you.
Is that true, really? I mean,
That has happened. Ask, was it the Hessians that Washington jumped in?
Oh, yes,
yeah,
of
that's
course.
A long story.
Christmas
We're not going
to
do that one. Later on, if you join CIUT and go to CIUT.fm and join them, become a member and mention the Taylor Report, and we will tell the George Washington killed the Hessians.
Well, why not tell that story on Christmas Eve when we have a show?
We'll do it on Christmas Eve. They thought it was Christmas. Washington wouldn't do that, would he? Oh, yeah. You don't know the Washington. So we're going to be talking about some union matters, and I would introduce that subject. I'll just say the IATSE 58 is still locked out. And just to give you their full name, they are the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, and Winter Fair is coming, and if you don't cross that picket line, and let me just tell you, all the unions are saying loudly and clearly, the good unions, don't cross the picket line, telling their members, and we're going to read some of the names, but a detail that I came across that I thought was interesting, I was telling Mick about this earlier, is that the president of the local IATSE 58 called on the performer named Drake. Nobody has two names anymore except the Taylor Report. To please, he was going to Tacoma to perform, Washington, and there IATSE has had a union since 2015, but the management won't offer him a contract. So they said, please, say something, do something, I mean, help out. They didn't get an answer, but by way of talking about it to make so that Drake might consider it, because they pointed out that a great performer had always come to them to support them, unsolicited, and that was Prince. So Drake, Prince, went out of his way to help IATSE. And the first vice president of the IATSE, I'll give you his name when we come back later. But so listen, Prince is a good guy. So we're going to play a little Purple Rain, and then we'll come back. Okay. This is my little joke. No, we'll have it for you in a moment. This is the Taylor Report. And Phil, the postal workers I have an announcement before the postal worker. And that is that in Hamilton, the Hamilton Coalition to Stop. Never meant to call. And if you could just hold him, just tell Prince to wait just a moment. And the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War is going to be an information picket at CBC Hamilton, 118 James Street, Friday, November the 8th, 7 to 8:30, during the monthly art crawl. We'll look into that sometime. And it's to protest the CBC's unrelenting, favorable coverage of the White Helmets. And there will be special instructions, prepare for rain. Say, hey, prepare for rain, we got it. That was Prince, Purple Rain, I remind you. And you could go to IATSE 58. They have a Twitter account. I urge you to do it. There's an article in The Guardian in which Dan DiTola, who is the vice president of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, tells the story about Prince. He said he was from Minneapolis, and he said Prince understood. He said we have a strong union culture. Very important to underline, union culture in Minneapolis. And Prince recognized it, respected it. And what I liked about, the word I liked in his comment was it was unsolicited support. He said to them, look, I know how important you guys are. And man, when I read that, I was touched. I have to tell you. And they are locked out. You remember the CNE, they were locked out throughout. And they've been getting a lot of support. Factory Theater supports them. And Equity, and it's an organization called Equity, and Elementary Educators, the OSSTF, all been, and the Catholic teachers have been expressing support. I urge you, go to the IATSE 58 if you want to know. That's spelled, our letters are IATSE 58. Scroll down and you'll get, if you want to read the story about the appeal to Drake, et cetera, by the union president, local president in Toronto. I like to see the expressions of solidarity. Here he is, his members are facing a lockout. And now winter fair is coming. And again, this, people have to be reminded that these workers have been locked out. And yet he reaches out and asks for support for his sister local in Tacoma, Washington. That's how you get it done, frankly. And Phil, we have the postal workers. We have an ongoing matter with them. And
as people
so
know.
So what is it they want? So what is this about?
They want a freely negotiated contract that addresses their issues, and that seems to be more.
And what are the issues according to them?
And I'll just read a little bit of what they say here. After 10 months of negotiations, the intervention of two mediators and 2 weeks of rotating strikes, Canada Post is more and more showing its true culture, its true colors. All of its lofty rhetoric and the image it is attempting to project to its employees and the public are turning out to be nothing more than smoke and mirrors. It needs to be said, Canada Post talks the talk but doesn't walk the walk. Canada Post says publicly it doesn't promote precarious work and would rather keep regular jobs and even create more of them. It also claims to care about the overburdening of letter carriers. As for the rural suburban mail carriers, Canada Post professes to look favorably on the arbitration decision that grants them pay equity. And just by way of background, the rural suburban mail carriers are predominantly women and get paid less to do the same job as the urban letter carriers, who are predominantly men. But its proposals at the bargaining table are very different. Here are two examples. One is overburdening. Many letter carriers are exhausted and calling for help because they are overburdened and often have to work forced overtime on their route. Your negotiating committee has submitted proposals to address this situation that Canada Post continues to reject. In its global offer dated September 7th and October 3rd, Canada Post made demands that seek to increase its ability to use precarious workers without even trying to solve the workload issue. Instead of working toward a solution, Canada Post is pulling back even more and taking harder positions. It wants to be able to hire an unlimited number of temporary, on-call, disposable employees and assign them all the work it wants in peak period, that is, for 3 months of the year, all the while ignoring letter carriers who need help. These on-call employees might have to work more than 40 hours a week with no overtime pay and would be let go when the peak period is over. So that's just some of the issues that these strikes are about. And Phil, can I mention something that's been kicking around on social media? It's a wonderful meme. It points out that in 1981, and you would remember this, we had a dear friend who was involved in it, there was a national postal strike.
Dear friend.
We had many, many friends involved in it. Yeah. And one of the issues they were on strike about was they were demanding maternity leave, paid maternity leave. And the postal officials at that time, along with their cheerleading section, the Toronto Sun, were saying, what is this world coming to? Where do these people come up with these crazy demands that which will bankrupt the country? You know, we're supposed to pay you to go have a baby. That was the argument. Of course, paid maternity leave is now standard in the unionized sector and actually in most of the non-union sector too. But it was the postal workers who went on strike for it and demanded it 37 years ago that put the issue on the table in Canada. So if you think that with postal workers don't know what they're doing, they do.
It is interesting how history catches up. Yeah. Right? I was just reading Jack London talking about, he said when he was a kid, he was called the boy socialist of Oakland, California. And he said, they used to write about me in the papers because he was standing on street corners. He was just literally was a kid. He was about 12, I think. And he said, they called me they wrote about me like I had dynamite in my pockets. He said, my argument was that we should have municipal transportation should belong to the city.
Oh, what a subversive position.
I was the red dynamiter. That's how they talked about me. He said, now he says the mayor is in favor of that.
Listen, we may need Jack London to come back on that issue because it looks like people are trying to take it away from us. Right?
When it comes to prisons in the United States, now it's a growth industry, which, yes, a troubling matter. Well, I'm glad we spoke up on this matter, the postal workers. I, by the way, I've had all those jobs. I've been the temporary guy, and I've also been the guy who on Thursday, when all the magazines arrived, became a mule and had to lug that stuff. And of course, the other issue with being the part-time guy or being the guy that worked the night shift and being the youngest of the group, they would tell me, it's raining today, and a couple of guys phoned in sick, and so you're going to deliver their route.
Kidding. Yes.
Yeah. And so first you have to sort that mail, which is meant that instead of being out of the building by about 8 and home and back in maybe by 1, I would be still out there in the dark knocking on doors with people standing on their front porches. Who are you? Anyway, that's kind of, that's a reality, folks. And it takes organization, a union, to keep the conditions at all human. So, more power to them. Now, I know we've already mentioned IATSE, and of course, they're honorary member as of now, Prince. There's some other issues. Oh, we got to talk about. I saw an item from a UA. I started to say a UAW member. Can you remember when there was a UAW?
Yes, I do.
Then it became, what did it become?
CAW. Then it became Unifor.
And now it's called Unifor.
And then it's, well, anyway, I was going to make a joke, but I won't.
Their maximum leader was allegedly seen with all the maximum leaders of the Liberal Party celebrating what had happened in the showdown with Trump. And they pulled the old thing of, as will happen, by the way, when negotiations are take place in it, and the negotiators don't do too well, and they come back and they say, "Well, it ain't perfect, but it's the best we could do." And you say, "That was the best? That's you gave away my shirt, my shoes," that's a troubling image that we take away from this. Is that, and incidentally, Cup W, who we were just speaking of, and CUPE both roundly criticized this agreement, and the steelworkers, but Mr. Dias of the Unifor is embracing the liberals who negotiated. I love the name of the agreement. It's the USMCA, which is, to me, United States Marine Corps A. That's what it is.
Well, I think somebody thought.
Hey,
of
how
that.
Come C came last? By the way, U.S., Mexico, Canada.
Yeah, Canada came last.
Does that tell you something?
Because actually, I think even a bully like Trump kind of respected that the Mexicans put up more of a fight than the Canadians.
Well,
did.
Mexico had a revolution, as yeah. you know, and they are very touchy when it comes to dealing with the Americans, because the Americans took 1/3 of their territory by point of a pistol. And the United States Army, no, there's bad blood. Has been and serious issues. Canada is another story. The special relationship that got passed from the British hand to the U.S. hand, and as long as all the Anglos remain together, that was the formula. But anyhow, this is nobody believes, in fact, that this was anything other than the best they could do with a gun to their head. I think that would be the scientific way of speaking of this. But to embrace the ruling party of Canada, which is not a socialist party, I looked into it, it's not socialist. And try to put a labor face on it. And the people who love it, by the way, are the Liberal Party hacks, because they say, "Hey, look who we got. Yeah. Jerry is here." But get Jerry in the middle of the picture. And no, that's how it works. And and we are in a labor crisis because the Unifor has left the CLC, and everybody's in a fool's paradise that we're all going to just go quietly down the street. Ain't going to happen. Something is going to go bang because of this. And we will follow that. That's among the things that concern us. So I believe we had some. Hey, by the way, I want to just ask, did we find that song? We did? We're going to play a bit of a song, which is apropos of what Phil was just telling us about.
There once was a union maid, she never was afraid of goons and ginks and company finks and the deputy sheriffs who made the raid. She went to the union hall when a meeting it was called, and when the legion boys come around, she always stood her ground.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union.
This union maid was wise to the tricks of company spies. She couldn't be fooled by a company stool. She'd always organize the guys. She'd always get her way. When she struck for better pay, she'd show her card to the National Guard, and this is what she'd say.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union till the day I die.
You gals who want to be free, just take a tip from me. Get you a man who's a union man and join the ladies' auxiliary. Married life ain't hard when you got a union card. A union man has a happy life when he's got a union wife.
Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Till the day I die.
Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Hey, listen, membership drive is going to be coming up next Monday, please. You can start now, CIUT.FM, and make yourself a member and mention the Taylor Report. And by the way, we're on SoundCloud, Taylor-Report.
Taylor-Report at SoundCloud and the Taylor Report at Facebook.
And on Facebook, so... And by the way, that little piece is somewhat dated, but the spirit is right and the thought is right. When I say dated, they used to have women's auxiliaries, and that was a big step.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, at the height
they were in the middle of all those fights. By the way,
the height of Margaret Thatcher's changes in Britain, you had men's auxiliaries because the women were the only people working in some British cities, and you know. And the unemployed men who used to be factory workers would get together to support their wives at work, you know, and that, you know, because the labor force shifts and whatever works for the bosses, whatever can drive down wages and, you know, disadvantage the working class, the bosses will go for it. You know?
If it will drive down wages, somebody already thought of it.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, we want you to make sure this is get with us. Get a tote bag. Go to Iceland. Live happily ever after. And. Support CIAT and the Taylor Report, and all you do is CIAT.FM. Next week, we're going to be doing it for fun, and we'll have everybody in here and reminding you of all the wonderful things we think we've done.
Phil, can I just remind our listeners that there's a website called freemumia.com. That's F-R-E-E-M-U-M-I-A, freemumia.com. And remember that Mumia Abu-Jamal has been in jail in Pennsylvania. He's a political prisoner because he's convicted. They said he killed the policeman. He didn't get a fair trial, so I don't even care whether he did or not.
But he did not.
That's right. But he did not get a fair trial, and he can't be sprung because the organized right wing in the States does not want him.
Well, that brings us to another matter, liberals, because now we have Philadelphia is boastful of a new district attorney who came in on, we're going to stop this racist stuff and we're going to, you know, be more even-handed, and particularly we're going to root out racism. Well, the case of Mumia Jamal staring this prosecutor in the face, and or it might be a district attorney is a term I guess I want.
He's a district attorney. He's the elected district attorney, and he promised great things.
On a reform basis.
Right.
But this would be, you know, it turns out he has no passion for this subject. And this is, a lot of people become frustrated because this is a phenomenon called the liberals, which might give us an opportunity, a segue here, to talk about the Bannon Frump thing. It was, what stands out? Everybody has their own issues with the whole matter. I would start with the Monk Institute decides they're going to, you know, stage these debates. It used to be university, but now it's more and more somebody who put money in. They have a little board, and then they choose. And next thing you know, people scratching their heads, how did that happen? These are two small fries, actually. Both Bannon and Frump are small fry. Did I call him Frump? It's Frump.
You called him Frump.
Okay, Frump.
Yeah, but and that's so, okay. That works.
We'll
call him Frump.
He's a very dignified gentleman.
Yeah.
And so we argue, well, is him worse than that? And what bothers me is that Mr. Frump was... they said, coined the phrase, axis of evil. And that axis of evil labeling continues on today. Libya, Syria, Iran, North Korea, et cetera. They're going to get them. That was the policy. This was a war policy, an aggressive policy. These are standing government members of the United Nations, sovereign countries. But the bug got loose, and we had Hillary saying we have to have a no-fly zone and bomb Syria, which is a violation of the international. The UN actually sanctioned. They trusted this liberal, Clinton, when she said, well, no-fly zone. But, you know, that allegedly is non-interference. Of course, it's gross interference, but it was tolerated. It led to the destruction of Libya. It's a hideous situation, and it's particularly racially hideous because Africans who come to Libya have sold on slave markets, literally, in Libya. And during the time of the so-called, quotes, revolution, the one that Mr. Frum and Mrs. Clinton were in favor of, the forces that were fighting Gaddafi were saying that Africans were problem, and that only people fighting for Colonel Gaddafi were Africans. That's the way they put it. And so guess who suffered when these elements took power? And when I say took power, they shared it, and now they fight each other. It's a bunch of warlords. So, but they're not done yet. They've targeted Syria, and Canada's part of that. And so I'm glad there was people who don't like Bannon. I'm glad there are people who don't like Frum. But could we discuss the policies? The policy of destroying a sovereign country is what matters. And by the way, it's called war. And if you want to worry about it, people say fascism. We are directing fascism onto the people of Syria. Canada has no problem with the army of the United States placing itself members inside the territory of Syria, of Donald Trump saying, well, I saw a picture of a child harmed. I'm going to fire missiles and destroy things inside Syria. See, that I think the ordinary Syrian would say, that sounds fascist to me. But that isn't discussed enough. Let's talk about what it is we're against. We're against aggression and war. And both these guys, to a degree, are involved in it, although there's a little bit of a family dispute among them, because one group didn't really want to have, they said, a major confrontation with Russia. The other one did. But we have, in the American ruling circles, it's Obama. He's the guy who knocked over Libya. He destroyed it. It was him. And it was, and Hillary said she was going to do the same to Syria. Her slogan was a no-fly zone. They all went to McCain's funeral, and McCain was angry with Trump for not attacking Iran, you know, with force. At the moment, he's going through this thing of preparing for it by sanctions, etc. But people better make up their mind: are they against this or not? This war policy. Because these two characters, between them, you know, they're not very important, but the one that is got to be stopped is the axis of evil malarkey, because these are sovereign countries, and nobody gave the authority to Washington to extend its values, as Chrystia Freeland would say. We want to export our values. You do that by sending an air force and missiles and an army, allegedly. I'm saying that in an interview that he was in favor of doing it. It was good for Iraq, they said. And of course, Iraq has been torn to pieces by this stuff. Now, and apropos of that, I want to mention again that there's going to be this demonstration in Hamilton because of CBC's coverage of the removal of some elements from Syria, saying that they had to be rescued. Well, they didn't, in fact, have to be rescued. That's itself a myth. But people like to talk about false news, and as a matter of fact, the Globe and the Star and the CBC are forming committees to fight false news. So they may as well start with their own papers. And the Globe and Mail, they quoted the former Attorney General of Canada saying that the Syria, what they call civil defense. Syrian civil defense was the only, I repeat the word, only civil defense organization in Syria. that is, well, that would be true if he was recognizing the actually internationally recognized Syria civil defense, which happens to be sanctioned by the government, present government of Syria. The people who call themselves that are imposters. And he failed to mention that. He failed to mention that, well, if you say, well, I recognize the imposter, well, okay, that makes two then, because one does exist, and it is internationally recognized. And here we are in a really a dangerous situation where people are perpetuating myths. They have a nickname, and I'm not going to go into their nickname because that's just a public relations exercise, as Seymour Hersh has pointed out. Why would the former attorney general and the liberal government call these guys the Syrian civil defense? Because it's a regime change exercise. You're calling them legitimate, and you're delegitimizing the actual Syrian civil defense. That's your goal. You failed. You got beat. These guys had to run for it. That's their problem. And it's also a myth that they were in any physical danger. They like to tell that story. So I think we have a minute to go. Gee, we don't even. I'm going to have to complain. Prince, I think, sang too long. We did find that he supported IATSE, and we're very grateful. Listen, next week we're going to do some serious membership fundraising. So we hope you will tune in. And at CIUT.FM, you can start now. And just mention the Taylor Report. Phil Conlon, thanks very much. And Mick, thank you. We'll see you next week.